for joining us for episode 5 of season 5 of Couples Inc., a place where we help couples work better together.
The first and third Wednesday of each month, we drop episodes with advice, tips, and real-world experience for partnering in business and life.
I'm Glenn, a business owner and communication strategist. Keep this in mind.
Okay.
Every time you get dressed, if you die, that's your ghost outfit forever.
Oh, see, I gotta pick comfort then. Comfort over style from now on.
So you'd be a comfort ghost.
Comfort ghost, yes. I'm Jody, Glenn's partner in life and business, and I think it's hilarious when you see these viral videos of older, aka our age, teachers, police officers, etc., holding their own in a dance battle with kids. I mean, dude. Wait. My nieces say bruh. I mean, bruh.
Bruh.
Bruh. We're the generation that brought you Breakin' 1 and 2 and Beat Street.
Yeah.
And we even have a friend who says he used to bring his own cardboard to events just in case. So quit making it seem like it's so unusual.
Those masterpieces alone should be reason enough that we own the genre.
Yes, dance battle. We own it.
Yeah. On today's show, we discuss the risks you take as a couple in business together, and then interview Regina Schober of Poetica Marketing about planning a company retreat.
And at the end of the show, Glenn applies to NASA?
NASA.
Okay.
There's not just one monkey that goes into space anymore.
Not anymore. Now, without further ado, let's launch this episode of Couples Inc. For our topic, we thought we'd chat about the risks you take as a couple in business together.
I really like the way you chewed the last part of
risks. Well, because there's more than one, and I wanted to make sure. Risks.
Very well enunciated.
Yeah, it's kind of like asterisk. I always like to make sure I say asterisk.
Asterisks?
Asterisks.
That's the plural.
The more you say it, the less it sounds like an actual word anymore.
It's asterisk-licious.
No, that's not right. It's risks. Anyway.
Risks. It's like wasps.
Oh, I grew up, people were calling it waspers.
You had a nest of waspers,
yes. Nest of waspers.
That's what I used to hear, too.
Oh, my gosh.
Riskers.
Riskers, yes. Anyway, we digress. And that's one of the risks you take when you work as a couple in business.
No humor
right
allowed.
Off the bat.
That's,
right off the bat.
This is cutting into our productivity, Spears. Stop it.
I know, right? But, I mean, as any business owners, you take on risk if you own a business, mm-hmm. but is it harder or compounded because you own it with a spouse, or does dealing with it as a team lessen the burden, or is it a little bit of both? But we came up with 4 risks, and there are plenty more risks, but we came up with 4 that immediately come to mind when it comes to owning a business, particularly as a couple. Let's go through them.
Number 1. One income source.
Okay. Now, opening a business, that is risky. And if you are the only breadwinner, say you have a stay-at-home spouse, or you are by yourself, that's risky. But when you're a couple, you've basically just said,
say goodbye to money.
Goodbye to money. Because it is, suddenly you are one income source and you have to think, okay, do we have a backup plan? Do we have savings, income? It is a tough thing. I think it keeps some people from even doing it.
Yeah. Of course, that's one of the big blockades to people just going out, on mm-hmm. their own and putting up their shingle. Sometimes I put this in just for your cogitation.
You love that word.
Cogitation. Sometimes I feel like that we have 2 incomes.
Okay.
Because very often we divide mm-hmm. and conquer. And so that kind of gives us, in effect, a dual revenue stream. It'll go, both of our efforts will go on the same ticket, but it's like we've doubled our staff almost.
I guess because we're a micro business and we're kind of almost like 2 solopreneurs mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of projects we work on together, but we also have very different roles. So that may be a little different. But say, for instance, I was a dentist and you joined me to be the CFO office manager.
Right.
You wouldn't be doing tasks with clients or patients in that case.
I might. slip on a lab coat and go in there and just start looking in people's mouths arbitrarily.
I mean, how hard could it be? I mean, come on. But, you know, so that would be a case of where it wouldn't be that dual income. That would be where you'd basically kind of have one person driving the customers or the patients or the clients, and the other is in the business but not necessarily in the generation of income part of it.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, you're right. We have a little bit less of a risk because we both do jobs or tasks that are like billable directly to clients.
Sure.
Where some people don't. Even though we do have that, there were a couple of lean years early on.
I blame you. I mean, that's...
Well, I was going to say, but what helped us is we, in my notes, we stayed focused and tried to build each other up. That was
Okay,
so
well,
way to make my point.
I blame the board of directors of Couples, Inc.
Of which is us. I think small businesses have cash flow issues sometimes, or struggles, or profitability issues sometimes early on. Maybe it's during a cycle, like, for instance, the pandemic. But I think what has been really great as a couple in business is we both are fully invested. We both fully understand the situation. And we, as I mentioned, can help, you know, pull each other, you know, build each other up. And if one's feeling, you know, a bit of a funk, then the other can kind of, you know, kind of help. I feel like it really is a benefit to be a couple in business when you are dealing with those kinds of things, those kinds of risks.
Definitely.
Now, again, you have one income. This is where we, during our lean time, when we've had any time of lean year in our marketing business, we tried to revise our budget and cut expenses before it became an issue, knowing ahead of time, kind of making some projections that, okay, here are some things that we can probably not re-up in terms of business services that we needed or subscriptions that we had.
Yeah.
And did it before it became an issue.
Meat in the sandwich on Wednesdays only.
Right.
Yeah. Rest of the time, it was a wish sandwich.
A bread sandwich.
Bread sandwich?
Bread sandwich.
Sometimes mayonnaise sandwich.
It's just, you kind of look at some, because you probably should look at this even when you're doing well. You probably shouldn't be spending money that you don't need to spend. But if you have projections and you're like, okay, we need to think about some things, address it before it gets out of hand.
Number two, relationship strain. Is that the type of strain that's going around these days? Relationship strain?
You know, I've lost track of how many different strains. I hope we're, immunized against it.
Got a mask up again.
This business ownership, I mean, that's stressful.
Sure.
It is. There is no way around it. But when you're with your spouse, you have that added extra that your conflict resolution skills need to be on point.
Yeah.
Because it could be miserable.
Yeah. It tends to get microscoped a little bit more.
Yeah. Because if you're like just with a business partner, you don't have to see them after work. Or if you own your own business, or if you work for someone else, you don't have to deal with it. But if it's really where you are not handling conflict in the office and at home in the right way, it can make both of your, lives, your work life and your home life, miserable. I just think that you just really need to be honest with your partner, talk about things. Like, if you're feeling overwhelmed, like, hey, I don't think this is going to work. I really can't take on all these things. Let's talk about it, as opposed to letting it just simmer. And then it manifests itself in relationship strain.
Yeah.
Do you not agree?
I do agree. And the strain is with me.
Well, I don't have a conflict with you.
Okay. You know, stress is a funny thing. Sometimes it's brought out what I felt like was my best work.
Are you talking about stress or are you talking about pressure?
Yes.
Because I see them as two different things, but I think you're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
Because pressure, right, can bring out the best. If it's a good pressure, like, ooh, we've got a new project, or ooh, we've got to do these. I don't know why everything starts with an ooh. Ooh, we've got to do this.
Is that French?
Maybe.
Ouvre.
Maybe. But I think of pressure as different when I think of stress as in a negative way.
Okay.
But, I mean, do you think that they're kind of the same?
They are for me a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when I'm under stress, the price at the other end of that is going to be, you know, bad for you. Mm-hmm. It's bad for me anyway. But when I'm engaged in a project or in a series of projects or tasks, then yeah, I can deal with that way and channel it into my effort.
I think stress helps in some ways. Stress and or pressure helps you focus.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah. All right.
Number 3, never leave work at the office.
That's going to happen. You know, that's one of the things that when you're a couple in business, you're going to find yourself talking about work on date night or different times during the day. It's going to creep into your daily life. And we've talked to many people. Some people set hard boundaries. Others kind of have some fluid boundaries, but they still try to have that blend of what their personal life and their work life is. But I think if you set yourself up for, like, we're never talking about work outside of work,
yeah,
you're gonna fail, and then you're gonna beat yourself up for that, and it's going to cause unnecessary anxiety and stress.
Cause stress, which can bring out your best work. So go ahead and do that.
No, but don't you think that, like, it's sort of an impossible thing?
Well, yeah. It has been certainly in our experience,
mm-hmm.
and I think that one of the reasons is that we get along so well and we work so closely together, not during the business day necessarily. We're in separate office spaces doing separate things many times. But I think that when you're engaged in a creative field,
mm-hmm.
then it can't help but seep through into the private parts of your life.
Yeah, I think you're right. It depends on the industry. You're right. There's, like, if you are in a creative industry, you are going to find yourself, like, for instance, we do marketing and advertising in our other world, and you might see something and that sparks an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And where maybe if you are, again, let's use dentists as an example, you might talk about work, but it's probably going to be more about the operations of work, what you should be doing, and that may be more stress-inducing.
Or the dental operations.
Or the dental operations. Then,
man, that number 3 molar was just a
yeah, cracking. You're not going to, well, I don't know. I've never hung out with a dentist to know if they, do they talk about the number 3
molar? They have
molar?
To. Most dentists will talk to you about almost anything.
That's true. Yeah, because it's one-sided conversation. It was their life.
What they do.
They just, that drives me crazy. So tell me about yourself.
How was your weekend?
Yeah. So, but I just feel like, yes, it's a risk that you're going to take if you have a business with your spouse, that you're going to find the separation of work and personal very blurry. But I think the way to cope with that is to give yourself a break and some grace and know, yeah, you're going to talk about these things, and just figure out what your boundaries are. You know, if it's creative ideas, yes, let's talk about it. If it's operational or employment or employee discussions, let's wait and schedule a meeting during work. Hmm. You know, just kind of be like actively deciding what it is that is a, you know, deal breaker in that world. And then that kind of helps you with that risk.
One thing that a lot of people do, a lot of business people, is get their most important and biggest task done first thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing in the morning, first thing when you start your business day, so that you don't have that carrying through not just the day, but maybe through after work.
Oh, so you have
into
that
your personal life,
you know, hours of buffer.
Yeah.
So you've got these big projects,
yeah,
and then between now, that the end of those projects and the end of your workday, you've got lunch, you've got afternoon hours, you've got, you know, maybe task oriented things. I could see how that could definitely help, because if it's on your mind, it's because you know you're just dealing with
it. It's the old saying: if you're going to have to eat a frog, do it first thing.
Is that an old saying?
It is now.
It is now.
It's 5 seconds old. Number 4, complicated resignation / retirement.
Yes, this is a risk that you take by being with a partner.
With an older person.
With your spouse. And we've talked about in a previous episode, there is an age difference. But it's also in any situation. If you are a couple and you're both the same age, but you have children and one of you wants to be stay at home, or one of you wants to move on and do something different. That's a risk you're going to take. And it's as best as you can, plan ahead for that, or just be honest and say, you know what, I see myself leaving the company, not the relationship, but leaving the company in this number of years. Let's work towards that. Because there are some people who want to retire a little bit earlier than their spouse, even if they're the same age.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I've seen that happen before, where people have like wanted to pursue something different. They've been in the business together with their spouse for 10, 12 years, but they're like, I'm ready to pursue something different. Or they have children who are at a critical age that they need to spend time supporting them.
Yeah. And entrepreneurs are not, and business owners are not immune to that, I guess, career itch.
Yeah.
That you
maybe
have for, you know, want to branch out and try something new every so often.
That's why there are career, you know, serial entrepreneurs who just, they start a business and then maybe sell the business.
Yeah.
And so that is a risk that either you or your spouse will find something different. You just got to plan ahead and talk about that.
Yeah. And as a sidebar, we're going to be going through some of this with my retirement.
Are you announcing your retirement?
No. I've got in caps here on my script, not right now. But in a few years.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep a journal. And if our listeners aren't sending enough money in to support us, I will read it on future episodes as punishment.
As punishment. Well, don't expect a watch, though.
In our interview today, Regina Schober, the events coordinator with Poetica Marketing, talks about the planning of and the importance of a company retreat.
Regina, one of the things we wanted to talk about is why should a small business consider planning a retreat? Because a lot of people think it's really for large companies or big corporations to think about a retreat.
It does sound very corporate.
It sounds very corporate. So why would a small business or a micro business even consider it? And why would it be, you know, something important for them?
I do. I hear that. But I might argue that the smaller the business, the more important the retreat actually is. And I can explain. Let's start with employees that are at a larger company. You know, they might sometimes feel lost in the crowd or like a small sort of insignificant piece of a really big picture. So a retreat for them is obviously pretty crucial to increase their morale and unity and just keep them feeling appreciated and important, like they are really part of the bigger picture. But on the other hand, smaller businesses often have employees who wear multiple hats. They have bigger personal ties to their work, like you two, or like my husband and me. We own our businesses, and it takes up a lot of our time and energy. And even in, you know, companies with more than just two people, you do feel like there's a lot to cover and not as many people to do everything. So yeah, smaller businesses really should take that break and take a step back, but they just may not feel like they have the time. Either way, a retreat is a great way to hit the reset button. If employees are feeling burnt out, a retreat can help them unwind and bond with their coworkers. And if they're feeling lost or unheard in their work, a retreat can offer those opportunities to be seen and heard and to grow and learn together. Whether a company is big or small, chances are it's being run by humans still. You know, we haven't completely handed it off to the robots yet, so we all need a break from time to time. So a retreat is a great way to do that.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that you and your husband are a small business owned by a couple, and that's something that you guys think consider. Glenn and I, we did a retreat, and it was great. We just rented an Airbnb in a nearby town. We didn't really plan it to be a touristy thing, but it was a change of location. It was really good so we could focus on the big picture. And so we sat down and thought, talked about who we wanted on the podcast, where we wanted the podcast to go, our topics we wanted to discuss, just sit down and brainstorm all those things. And yeah, we're just two people, but we considered it a company retreat.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so great that you were able to do that. I'll be honest, my husband and I haven't taken a retreat just yet, but we do take the time to unplug and just talk about where we are and where we want to go. And you're right that, you know, getting out of the office, or if you're remote, getting out of your house and just getting fresh air and new scenery, you know, it can be so important to bringing some life back into your workplace.
Does it always have to be offsite? And the sub question there is, how often do you think that the company should have a retreat?
Here's my suggestion. Once a year, I think companies should have that big retreat that is offsite and features a variety of sessions, you know, both work-related and completely just focused on relationship building and something more fun and even adventurous. It doesn't necessarily have to be a huge blowout event that pulls out all the stops, but just something that helps the company as a whole feel like they're away from the office, they can breathe a little, get to know one another, and strengthen those bonds while also growing together. In the meantime, I think it's important to have maybe a quarterly event that is held on site, or, you know, even just a cookout in the parking lot, something that brings employees together for a more accessible break instead of just waiting for that annual retreat. We can sprinkle in some maybe mini retreats to hold us over. So a bigger retreat offsite once a year and mini retreats, air quotes, every quarter.
I think sometimes when people think of company retreats, they think of like those bizarre, like locations where you do like the walk across hot coals or this elaborate ropes course that, and I'm like, ooh, that doesn't sound appealing to me. Some people,
yeah,
I'm
we,
sure
we
it's wonderful.
We didn't do that on our retreat.
We did not do, not even a trust
maybe
fall.
Maybe we're missing out. I don't know.
But so, I mean, you can be that kind of company that loves to do that kind of thing. You know, maybe you are an outdoors company and you're like, yeah, we're going to go do a hiking retreat. But what does it entail to truly be a retreat? Like, what kind of things are on the agenda? What kind of activities? Is it all work? Is it work and play? Just give us kind of an idea. And again, I know every retreat would be, I guess, dependent on the particular company and who they are and their goals. But just give us an idea of what would make a really good retreat agenda or plan.
Right. If you want to walk across coals and you can find that somewhere close by, then by all means, you should do it. You're right that you should consider what fits your company and your employees the most. If outdoor activities, sports, horseback riding, etc., work for your group, then do that. But if a quieter sort of board game filled afternoon is better for your team, then go that direction instead. There are so many different ways to hold a retreat, and I always encourage creativity. But here's my advice. You at least need a good balance of three things: communication, education, and vacation. It is so important to give your employees a fresh look at their job, the people they work with, and their value in the company. So offering sessions during which they can express their opinions, find solutions to issues, brainstorm ways to grow in the future, that's huge. Education. Whether it's training for the job they have, or something new that's coming, or something totally off the wall, like, I don't know, pottery, the importance here is growth. It's important to constantly challenge your team to learn and to grow together. So if they can overcome the fear and insecurity of doing something that's brand new, they can bring that skill back to the office with them. And of course, vacation. A nice dinner, maybe DJ and dancing, maybe outdoor games or a wine tasting. Some part of the retreat should have nothing to do with work and should just be play, because it is a retreat from the norm.
I love that, boiling it down to those three things.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah.
What are the biggest mistakes, you think, or the misconceptions about what a retreat should be?
I think sometimes we forget that a retreat should allow for organic growth. Sometimes the leaders or those who are planning the retreat think, you know, okay, at this point in the day, we're going to have a great discussion about blank. But then they're disappointed when that doesn't happen, or maybe a game or activity that was planned is a total flop. So you want to make sure that the sessions you've planned are appropriate for the group, like we've talked about, that the attendees will be interested and excited to be there. But most importantly, I think there should be some flexibility for plans to change, attendees to take a session into their own hands, and for, you know, something to kind of go in a different direction. Sometimes there's so much pressure to have a great time, it ends up becoming more work. And sometimes if a session isn't going exactly how the facilitator envisioned it, they have a hard time keeping up with the attendees, and then it can feel forced or awkward, and then participation starts to dwindle and things fall apart. So just remember that in the end, the retreat is for your employees and should really work with your employees. have a plan, but it's okay to expand or change gears if that's how it seems to be going.
You mentioned the facilitator. Do you recommend that people bring someone from outside of the organization to be that sort of like that guide, the Sherpa on their retreat?
You know what? Yes and no. I think it's really important to have sessions that are led by your leaders and management so that you can see that they have this vision and they're, you know, there for you and we're working together, right? But featuring a keynote speaker or someone who comes in from a third party to say like, hey, this is what I've observed. This is something to think about. Here's how you can grow as a company. That's important too. So I'd say that most of the work, most of the speakers should be in-house for the sake of feeling that unity and cooperation among like management and employees. But it's important to get an outside perspective as well.
Yeah, that's a good approach. And we'll include a link in our show notes to your business, which does offer guidance on planning.
Yes, absolutely.
Retreat. So we'll include that in our show notes. But this has been very interesting.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
We've got something that's a little bit, I don't know, maybe weightier than we usually do on segment C. We try to have fun and...
Right. But you say weightier, but I thought it was about NASA. So wouldn't that be weightlessier? Weightlessier.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah.
I was told I would be weightless.
Well, okay. Then,
I want to float.
Okay. I won't make you wait any longer.
Okay.
You may know that mm-hmm. NASA is looking for people to crew their latest Mars simulation.
So you're not going to Mars. It's just a Mars simulation.
I don't know what they're going to do to you when they seal you up.
Oh, that's true.
I don't think they do either. They might
just go ahead. You got to read the fine
print.
We got
them in there. Let's just push the button.
Read the fine print.
Yes. It's called CHAPEA, CHAPEA 2. I don't know what happened with the first one, and I don't think I want to know.
We don't talk about CHAPEA 1.
And you can apply. They're actively soliciting people to apply.
Okay.
And we'll put the link in our show notes. I filled out the application. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they have an age limit.
Oh.
And I fall over that age limit.
Just a tad, right?
You have to be this old to ride this ride.
Oh, okay.
So we've chosen some of the questions that they have on the online application.
Yeah, I'm curious. What do you, like... need to know about someone to be part of this simulation.
You know, the
simulation.
Funny thing is, it's not like they put you through a battery of equation solving or...
What about, I guess you don't have to do that. You know where they zip around the centrifugal force, the G-forces?
Actually, it's on there. Close your eyes and spin around in your chair for 60 seconds. Ready? Go. So we've chosen some questions and come up with a few of our own.
Oh.
Just to kind of level the playing field.
And when you say we, you mean you.
Well, yeah. I mean,
because I have not seen these questions.
The idea. Okay. It was your idea, and I'm running with it. So,
okay.
Question number one.
Okay.
Do you have inability to bend, walk, run, jump, lift, or cycle? And that's a yes or no question.
Is it?
Well,
because,
it is for them.
I mean, yes, I can, but can I?
You like, can what? Which one?
Well, okay, cycle. We just got ourselves an exercise bike. And
yes, we did.
And I've got arthritis in my hip. And so I'm doing it to try to build up my muscles. And I am very sore in my hip after just 10 minutes or 15 minutes. So yes, I can cycle, but I feel like I should have an asterisk. Ooh, call back to the first segment after that answer.
Well, yeah. And,
and when you say walk, is it uphill?
I don't know.
I mean, I got to have more information on this question.
It's very vague at this point. They put all these different functions into one question.
Yeah. I can cycle, but usually on a stationary bike.
Yeah.
I can walk, but I'd rather not do it uphill too often.
I can bend, but it's getting
back up.
Into a standing position. That takes a little more.
They didn't indicate that.
Yeah. They didn't. So the question I would put is, are you willing to train for the triathlon event at the Mars Olympics of 2044?
Yeah.
That's where this is headed.
Exactly. Yeah, you got to think
ahead.
That's
a yes or no question.
I'm going to say no, but I'd love to watch it because I love any kind of Olympics. I'm so excited about the Olympics this year.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so,
so
the Mars
yes
Olympics
to watch
in
the Mars 44? Olympics. Yes.
That's going to be on your watch list. All right. Number two, do you have a history of kidney stones?
Was that legit or what's that yours?
That is a legitimate question. They have several different medical-related questions, as you might imagine. And that's one of them.
Yeah, and that's when you had to say yes.
Well, I would have
said yes. Oh, I had one too.
Yeah,
I almost forgot, yeah.
I think everybody
everyone at a certain point, that's why they have the age thing, hence the bending and kidney stones.
Then you, if you're older, you have experience.
Wisdom.
Yeah,
I know.
It doesn't bother you as much.
Right.
It's just another ache.
And you have confidence.
Now, the obvious thing that I put in here is our question, do you have the ability to play anything by the Rolling Stones?
What do you mean? Like an instrument or play the, like, music on an iPad?
Again.
Or you know.
It's a nebulous question.
Sure.
Not well defined.
It's a big catalog.
Well, yes or no. Sure is not a choice.
Yes.
Okay. Number three, are you willing to participate in an isolation and confinement simulation with three other participants for 1 year? Apparently, that's the timeline on this thing. You have to be in it for a year.
Well, here's the thing. True introverts will be like, isolated with two other people or three other people? That's not isolated. Come back to me when you're really talking isolation.
Well, I guess this is, again, NASA's definition.
Of isolation is just three people.
Yeah.
Because obviously some people will be like, oh, yeah, hell yeah. But I don't know. Let's be alone together. Yeah. I kind of like the idea of just like you and me. You mean another couple or like a bunch of people? I don't know if like I want to be around just the same two or three people. I mean, if you're one of them, yes, but like you might find that other person who's just, you know.
Kind of an awkward moment here on the podcast episode. And we're moving on. Our version of that particular question, are you willing to participate in a stare down with three other people for 1 year?
How would you do that? You got to blink. A year?
The first one that blinks loses.
Within a year.
And is ejected from the experiment.
Yeah, I don't like eye contact with random people, so no.
The fourth one, are you willing to go for extended periods up to 1 year with restricted social media contact?
Again, some people would be like, definitely, you know, because it's like...
I might be one of those people.
I know, but we have to for our job.
But I'm an old man.
But it's like... I think this is where the generation thing, this is where the age limit works against them.
Sure does.
If you were talking to like our generation and older, they're like, yeah, been there, done that. I can do it again. Where you get some people who are younger and they've always been on social media might find it, you know, too much.
Yep. So our version of that is, and it's really an answer, just a year?
I know.
Number five, have you had experience working in situations that involve performance under pressure? You know, we were talking about pressure
a few minutes ago. Yes, I have. But I mean, okay, there's pressure like, okay, we got to get this ad to this magazine by 4 o'clock today. And there's pressure like, you've got to solve this problem. We run out of oxygen. I think that's a different kind. I don't know if I'm ready for that kind of pressure.
I guess it's a question of immediate priorities, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think that that's the same. Yeah. I mean, our most pressurist day, our day with the most pressure, or our task that has the most pressure, is nothing compared to something that you might find on a Mars installation or whatever.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's been pretty pressure-filled so far. Our version of that question, and something that I think is just as legitimate, have you ever held the flashlight for your father? Yeah. So situations that involve performance under pressure. Also learning situations, because that's how I learned most of the four-letter words
I was going to say, you learned something, but it wasn't whatever the task was. It was...
Absolutely.
In my house, it was the antenna. We had an antenna outside, but it had a pole all the way down to the ground. So my dad would be like, you know, because this is when we had just regular TV, not cable. Turn it to the left. No, stop.
How did that job fall to you?
Maybe I was taller than my sister. I don't know. Or she probably just ignored him and went home.
Well, why didn't he do it?
Because he had to observe the TV to see if it was coming in clear.
Wow.
I didn't question the divvy of the task.
Well,
but,
I guess you don't.
But there was a lot of like, no. Yeah.
You weren't on top of the antenna, 200 feet above.
No.
The ground, trying to.
No.
Okay. That's encouraging.
Yes.
Number six. Mm-hmm. What do you expect this experience to be like?
So that's not a yes or no. That's an open-ended. That's your essay part.
And there are several essay-style questions on the questionnaire also.
I would think that would be very weird. I don't know. I don't think I could do that. Basically, you're shut off from everybody. I mean, you don't get to travel. You don't get to, go to my favorite restaurants. Yeah, no. I think it would be basically hell.
Well, how about the answer being, I expect it to be like going to Mars, duh.
You win the essay contest.
Exactly. That's the gimme question.
That's the gimme question. I expect it to be like.
On their whole application. Number seven, and this is the last one.
Okay.
How do you think you might deal with a year of limited communication with at least a 20-minute time delay in all communications?
That I couldn't handle. I mean, I have to wiggle the mouse around if I'm waiting for something to load like 3 seconds. It makes me antsy. I can't imagine 20 minutes waiting for a response. And could you imagine if you get the response and it's like, okay.
Yeah, with nothing else, you'd have to really think about what you're going to say before you said it.
Sure.
It wouldn't be a normal conversation by our standards. But, I guess it'd be kind of like still sometimes when, let's say you're on a phone call with someone and they're in their car.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a delay and then you hear yourself, but it only lasts for half a second.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not the same as like a 20-minute delay. My question is, if you do all this, do you get one of those cool NASA t-shirts or sweatshirts?
I don't know because I couldn't fill it out and they wouldn't take it because I'm too old.
Oh, well.
So my response to that would be, you mean like being on hold with customer service?
Actually, that means you would be able to do this. You are very much the customer service person.
Well, and listening to all those flute solos, too.
Yeah, that depends. Yeah, are you going to be listening to a Kenny G song while you wait for this 20-minute response? That's the difference.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to Couples Inc., a podcast helping couples work better together.
We put out new episodes the first and third Wednesday of each month. But to make sure you don't miss a show, subscribe using your favorite streaming service. We're on all of them.
And if you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, go ahead, share it with others, post it on social media, or leave us a rating or review.
And be sure to visit our website, couplesincpodcast.com. To learn more about us, review show notes, or leave us a message.
Until next time.